watch the video. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Special welcome to Rabbi Linzer. Thank you to our executive director, Yitzi Matenki, and our office manager, Kayla Eisenbach. We are honored and privileged to come together this afternoon, although in Israel it's already the evening time, so the Shiva's already concluded this morning. But as a kolal, to mark the conclusion of the Shiva of a Gadol B'Yisrael whose connection to our yeshiva, to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, as a kolal of the yeshiva, has been indelible, and his imprint is profound in many, many ways. So as a kolal, we felt it was most appropriate to get together to mark the passing not just of an Adam Gadol, but also as someone who impacted our community, our yeshiva, and our kolal specifically in his visits, I believe, twice to the kolal since the founding of the kolal 7 years ago. I had the great zchus and bracha of participating in Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha's shir, when I studied in the Grus Kolal, and I had the opportunity to be exposed to the incredible breadth and depth of his knowledge and the analysis, but perhaps more than that, the Yiras Shamayim, the Yiraso that was Kodemas L'Chachmaso, that was apparent in his interactions with others, in his davening Maariv, and then having the opportunity just to learn from his Torah, like many of us around the world, in a more expanded fashion. So it would be a missed opportunity for us not to come together to note the significant loss that we feel as a world Jewish community. But on the other hand, there's a challenge because it's impossible to stand. Imagine you had a passerby who stood at the bottom of the Sears or the Willis Tower, and you asked them, so how tall is the Willis Tower? So they would have no means, this tourist would have no means of measuring because the height is so overwhelming. So it's impossible for me to even imagine the greatness of Rav Lichtenstein, to even begin to explain. So it would be ridiculous for me to try to even comprehend that for myself. So we asked Rabbi Linzer, who was a more senior colleague and Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, someone who I look up to, who I know has learned so much from Rav Lichtenstein, to share some of his insights, to give us an appreciation of this great Torah personality who can continue to inspire us. So without any further ado, I turn it over to Rabbi Menachem Linzer, Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein, principal of Hillel Torah Day School here in Chicago.
Thank you, Rabbi Brand, and hello to those in the room, as well as to those who are joining us remotely. I would only add to what Rabbi Brand said that just like he expressed about himself, I feel the same way. Really learned by Rav Lichtenstein for not such a long time, and there are many who are much closer to him than I, but nevertheless, our job is to do what we can. And we're gathering here to take a step back, to reflect, to remember, and to learn from this great person. A week ago today, the world lost a gadol, and I lost my Rebbe. The Gemara describes a Rebbe Muvhak, Gemara Bava Metzia, as someone from whom one learns most of their chachma, rov chachmaso. And the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah describes how for a Rebbe Muvhak, one is supposed to tear kriya, same way one does for a parent. And indeed, last week, many of Avaron's Talmidim tore kriya, many at the Levaya pointed this out, at the loss of their Rebbe Muvhak. In terms of understanding the phrase rov chachmaso, as Rav Aaron himself would say, one could look at this from a quantitative or a qualitative approach. Having been in his shir only for 2 years, and having learned only 3 masechto with him, I certainly did not learn most of my dapim of Gemara from him. However, he was without question my Rebbe Muvhak, in the qualitative sense. Though I only first started learning with him when I was 22 years old, Rav Aaron really taught me how to learn. Even though I already knew how to actually read a Gemara and decode it, perhaps, Rav Aaron taught me how to really understand it, how to approach a sugya, what to look for when reading a new Gemara, and what questions to ask when learning. When it came to learning for Rav Aaron, the goal was very clear and focused. It was lahavin ulahaskil, as he would often say. I remember once in a shir kloli, with hundreds of students, when Rav Aaron was exploring 2 ways of understanding a sugya, and one of the Talmidim raised his hand, was brave, and he said, "Lamai nafkamina, what's the practical difference? What does it matter if it's this way or that way?" There was no halachic implications. Rav Aaron replied very strongly, which he usually did not do. He usually replied very strongly to this Talmud. He says, like he was incredulous. Well, what kind of question is this? The nafkamina is understanding the Gemara. That itself is what makes all the difference. There didn't need to be a practical halachic outcome. Arriving at the correct understanding of Torah Hashem was the ultimate goal unto itself. But even more than that, Rav Aaron taught me personally how to think, not just about learning, but in life in general. He was very much known for his complex and sophisticated thinking. Nothing was ever simple for Rav Lichtenstein. Due to a combination of his brilliant mind and his integrity, he couldn't look at things just on a superficial level. He needed to look at all sides of every issue. As everyone in the yeshiva knew, he was famous for always saying, "Mitzad echad, mitzad sheni." There was never one way of looking at something. In learning, he looked at all the possibilities in any sugya. And for those familiar with his Derech HaLimud, you know that even before he began a sugya, he would outline all the possible understandings. For us, this got our minds ready and organized so that when we began to navigate the complexities of the Gemara and the Rishonim, we already had an organized framework through which to understand and organize the opinions. And he used the same approach when examining all areas in life. But this complex, comprehensive approach, while you would think made things more complicated, actually helped clarify and simplify the fundamental understandings of the sugya and the core issues in life that he was addressing. Rav Aaron taught us that a superficial and a partial understanding is actually more limiting and, in the end, more confusing because it doesn't really portray the true depth and understanding of the issue. So his complex thinking really helped to simplify and create clarity for us, both in learning and in life. Rav Aaron not only taught me how to learn or how to think on an intellectual level, he also inspired me spiritually and provided a real-life model of what it means to be a complete Eved Hashem. It was the combination of these two things that I saw as the ideal model, a towering giant in Torah together with sterling character. The Gemara Moin Katan explains, famous Gemara that I heard quoted a few times this past week in different Hespedim, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai Dichsiv, the Pasuk in Malachi, Kif Sifsei Kohen Yishmeru Das, Atari Vakshim Ipihu, Ki Malach Shem Tzvakosu. Im Dome Harav, Lamalach Hashem, Yivakshu Torah Mipiv. Im Lav, Al Yivakshu Torah Mipiv. Based on the Pasuk in Malachi, the Gemara says that the teacher, the Torah teacher, has to be compared to an angel of God. If the teacher is similar to an angel of God, then you should learn from him. But if he's not in his character like an angel, then you should not learn from him. In my life, and even before and since, I've encountered many Rabbanim, as many of us have, each with their own strengths. Some were brilliant scholars, others were more inspiring, others were more quiet tzaddikim, perhaps. But Rav Aaron, what was special about him, that he was all in one. He was literally like a Malach Hashem Tzvakos. It's very easy to get disillusioned when we see our leaders' shortcomings and imperfections. An exposure to Rav Aaron to a model of total integrity created a very powerful impact on me. What never ceased to amaze me, though, was his extreme integrity and humility and his deference and respect for all other people, which was especially surprising since very often, unfortunately, arrogance and intolerance is a common byproduct of sophistication and high intellect. But this was not the case with Lichtenstein. He honestly did not think of himself as any different and certainly not any better than anyone else, and nothing he considered nothing to be beneath him. The stories are endless, and I'm learning many more myself this week, and a number of them were exacerbated, no doubt, because he was also clean-shaven. In 1970, actually, when Rav Amital first invited Rav Aaron to join him at the Gush, he offered him the position of being Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Aaron flat-out refused. He was interested in coming, but he refused to take the title of Rosh Yeshiva away from Rav Amital. After all, Rav Amital started the yeshiva literally from nothing. He wasn't going to take away the title. They eventually agreed that they would share the leadership of the yeshiva, and they indeed did so for 4 decades. Being a Rosh Yeshiva, as we know, comes with tremendous authority and influence. And I've never heard of any other instance of two rabbis sharing the title and the same level of leadership of a yeshiva for four decades. In fact, one of my most beautiful memories of Rav Lichtenstein is from Yom Kippur. Rami Tal was always the Baal Musaf, and the Amud was on the right side of the Aron next to Rav Aaron's Makom. Right after Rav Amital finished the last Kaddish after Musaf, he turned to Rav Lichtenstein, and the two of them just embraced each other with so much love. And the eyes of all the Talmidim and the whole Beis Medrash were on them. Though they had very different strengths and styles, very much complemented each other, they had a tremendous amount of respect, admiration, and love for each other. And this made a profound impression on all the Talmidim of the yeshiva. The fact that Rav Lichtenstein even went to Israel was completely remarkable. Here he was the Talmud Muvak of the Rav of Rav Soloveitchik, and he was the Rav's son-in-law. He was destined to take the place of the Rav, leading as the leading Rosh Yeshiva at YU, and as really the leader of the modern Orthodox movement in North America. And he gave it all up to move to Israel, and not just to Yeshivat HaKotel, where he was offered to be the Rosh Yeshiva as well, which is already a well-known yeshiva, but to be part of a startup, I guess you could say, at Har Etzion. This was on top of the fact that, as is known, the Rav was very much against Rav Lichtenstein's decision to move to Israel. It was something that actually in the years immediately that passed after they made the move caused a degree of strain in their relationship. And here it was, the Rav Lichtenstein was going against the wishes of his Rebbe, of his father-in-law, and how could he do that? Rav Aaron told us many times that he saw Israel as the epicenter of Jewish history from this point in our history on, and he dreamt of living in Israel all his life and teaching Torah there, and his sense of integrity did not let him do otherwise. On the flip side, Rav Aaron also had no tolerance for arrogance, and especially religious arrogance. I remember in 1994, there was a period of some very terrible terror attacks, especially bus attacks, where many Israelis were killed. And there were Rabbanim at the time who issued statements giving reasons as to why these attacks were taking place. Most often it had to do something with secular Jews or sins of a particular segment of a community, usually not their own. And I still remember Rav Aaron's reaction in Shir to these statements. How could someone be so arrogant to claim to understand the Rabbanu Shel Olam's ways? Another story, Rav Aaron had great admiration for Rav Gusman. To speak about him a lot. And there's an apocryphal story, I don't know if it's true, but it's a good story, that during the Yom Kippur War, Rav Aaron volunteered to help out in the civilian sector because all the men were called up to the army. And the story is told that he was helping out by delivering milk. And when he delivered milk to Rav Gusman, they got to talking and learning, and Rav Gusman was heard saying how unbelievable Eretz Yisrael is, that even the milkmen are Talmidei Chachamim. Someone just told me the other day a story that they were giving Rav Aaron a ride somewhere, and the person's wife happened to be with them as well. Rav Lichtenstein insisted husband and wife sit together in the front, and he was going to sit in the back, and he would not hear of it otherwise. I remember that at the Levaya of Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Rav Aaron attended with thousands of others. Rav Neria was the founder of the Yeshiva Bnei Akiva. After the Levaya, people were waiting in line for the restroom before they were going to daven mincha, and Rav Aaron was among them. Soon, people in line noticed that Rav Lichtenstein was one of the people waiting in line, and they moved aside, invited him to go in front. When Rav Lichtenstein realized what they were doing, he responded in shock. Ani amod kan kamo kulam. He couldn't understand why someone would let him go first, and he certainly was not going to go ahead of anyone else. We're all equal. Why should I go in front of anyone else? Along the same lines, Rav Lichtenstein was once riding a public bus, and he got on at a later stop, and by that time there were no seats left. As we know, very often the buses in Israel get very crowded. So soon he was standing there, and soon someone realized that it was Rav Lichtenstein who was standing. And they got up to give him a seat. Of course, he adamantly refused. Just like me. Why should you stand and I sit? And he stood the entire ride. Another story, a little bit different, I heard from Rabbi Ben-Zion Scheinfeld last week, that once Rav Aaron was riding a bus, and he actually had a seat this time, but at the end, other people got up, and they were standing. Midway through the bus ride, Lichtenstein got up and insisted that the person who was standing next to him actually take his seat, The person refused and he insisted. He says, we both paid equally. Why should I sit the whole time and you stand the whole time? We'll split it. From that point, Rabbi Ben-Zion Scheinfeld said, he can never enjoy sitting on a bus, always feeling guilty that he had to give the seat to someone else. If Rav Lichtenstein did it, how could I not? I just heard the following story last week as well, that one year Rav Lichtenstein had miluim right before Pesach, and he served as part of the Rabbanut Tzvayit. He arrived at an army base, and it was right before Pesach, and the Rav of the base saw a clean-shaven guy come, figured he wasn't someone important, he sent him to go clean the kitchen before Pesach. After a couple of days of cleaning the kitchen, the Rav of the base finally got wind of the fact that this clean-shaven guy, who he thought was some young Rav, was none other than Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Shiva of Har Tzion, and he immediately changed his assignment. But the Rav Lichtenstein's sense of humility, but also his sense of duty, that this is something for Am Yisrael, for Eretz Yisrael, clean the kitchen, if someone has to do it, why shouldn't it be me? He would never have raised a voice or argued. And this was true in the yeshiva as well. I remember once on his way to Shir, Rav Lichtenstein would always, everyone knows, on his way to Shir, carry, he was a very large, tall man, large arms, and he would always carry a huge stack of Sfarim, his Gemara, his Rambam, his Shas, as well as all the many Rishonim, and he would carry it under his arm and walk faster than most of us could actually run to the room where he would give his Shir. One day a student wanted to show kavod for his Rebbe, and he wanted to help him with his Sfarim and carry it for him. It's not covered for the Rebbe to carry such a huge amount of Sfarim. We should carry it for him. So he went up next to the Rebbe, and he went up next to Rav Lichtenstein, he put his own notebook on top of the stack, and went to take the stack, you know, from under his arm, and he would carry it. Rav Lichtenstein, of course, wouldn't have it, and he proceeded on very fast, carrying the student's notebook with him, on top of the other Sfarim, to the Shir. And then, of course, there's the famous payphone story that's a legend, where Rav Lichtenstein once answered the payphone when there still were payphones outside the Beis Medrash, and the person on the other line says, who is this? He says, Aaron, can you please tell Daniel that Chani called? Sure. And Rav Lichtenstein faithfully delivered the message to the Talmud, who almost died of embarrassment upon receiving the message. I heard someone say this last week, that they think the reason he never grew a beard was that he didn't really want to be treated differently than anyone else, or seen differently. People often think of Rav Lichtenstein as a moderate. After all, he believed in Torah Umada, and he took more moderate political positions. Truth is, I heard someone point out last week that he was anything but a moderate. He was extreme in everything he did, and he approached everything with complete intensity. By the same token, Rav Bick, a longtime Talmud and Rebbe at the yeshiva, pointed out that someone thought there was a certain situation, and they were looking to Rav Lichtenstein for a kula and for a heter. So Rabik says, he responded, there's no such thing as a heter for Rav Lichtenstein. His whole life was a life of chiyuv, a life of obligation and responsibility. And especially, this, you saw this the most, in the most primary way, when it came to learning. He was a huge masmid, non-stop learning. I've told this story before to Rabbi Brand. On Yom Kippur night after Maariv, most of us just want to go back, go to sleep, right? It's prepare, store up our energy for the next day, for the fast, for the day of davening. Instead, Rav Lichtenstein, right after Maariv, would take his seat in the front of the yeshiva in the middle and start giving an all-night shiur on the topic of the Yom Kippur Avoda. Extremely esoteric, but of course, what else do you do Yom Kippur night than learn the Avoda? In the olden days, the shiur would go all night. By the time I was in yeshiva in 1995, people couldn't keep up with him, and he only went till about 2 a.m., till the last of the guys either went back to the dorm or fell asleep on the table there. On Motzei Tisha B'Av, I heard the story one year that everyone went right after the Maariv to break their fast. Of course, in the lunchroom, you're starving. And they were waiting for Rav Lichtenstein, and one of the boys went to look for him. People were waiting. And they found him in the Beis Medrash at his makom, and he was learning. He said to Rav Aaron, you know, people are waiting in the cafeteria. Rav Aaron said, you know, eating isn't the only thing that's usher on Tisha B'Av. Obviously for him, learning was much more important than food. Along the same lines, the story goes that when he was in Harvard going for his PhD in 1967 in English literature, Rav Lichtenstein was heard to have said he didn't learn as much in those days, only about 10 hours a day. Another aspect of Rav Lichtenstein that's especially admirable, considering who he was and all of his responsibilities, was his devotion to and his primacy he placed on his family. Once on a Shabbaton on the Upper West Side, I heard him tell a story about when his second son, Yitzchak, was born. It doesn't seem related that at the bris, the Rav, his father-in-law, was there, of course, and he spoke, and the Rav, Dvar Torah and remarks, focused on the pasuk Ki b'Yitzchak yikari l'chazara, and he kept harping on that, Ki b'Yitzchak yikari l'chazara. And Rav Lichtenstein took this to mean that the Rav was sending him a message, a subtle, not so subtle message. Because it was known, in addition to his nonstop learning and teaching, Rav Aaron was also very involved in social action, especially in those days, both in America and all over the world. In fact, last week I heard in Rabbi Sheinfeld's Hesped, he told the story that when Rabbi Sheinfeld, when he was his first week in yeshiva, he wanted to grow in learning, and he saw that a petek on the thermostat announced that Rav Lichtenstein was going to give a sicha that day before shir. He thought it was going to be something about Elul, something, you know, in Yonei Dioma. He gets the sicha, and Rav Lichtenstein starts speaking about helping, the importance of helping the Cambodian boat people. And as was known, he cared about causes all over the world. So back to the bris story. So Rav Aaron understood that the Rav's remarks to him was a message that though he was involved, of course, in learning and teaching and so many causes, his children must be the priority. Ki b'Yitzchak yikari l'chazara. His legacy will be primarily through his children, through his family, and through, in this case, his son Yitzchak. In fact, Rav Aaron went on to speak about how every week he would learn with his sons. When they were in high school in Nativ Meir, he would show up in the Beis Medrash from Mishmar, and he would learn with each one. And when someone there asked him, how does he have time? When the Rebbeim says, Rav Lichtenstein, how do you have time to do this? You have so many responsibilities. He says, how can I not have time for this? This is the most important thing. At the Levaya, his daughter Toni spoke about how each and every Shabbat afternoon he would take turns learning with each one of their children. And she said, tongue-in-cheek, he took away our ability to nap on Shabbos. Like, since then, you know, how can you nap on Shabbos? And these experiences were mentioned by most of his children in their Hespedim. Another nice thing that I heard that was mentioned, that unlike most fathers who give their children brachot, kiddush, right before kiddush Friday night, Lichtenstein blessed his children before they went to bed Friday night, giving each one a more intimate, elaborate, and personalized bracha that week. In addition to learning, his children recalled how he would play games with them, and he would come to their performances at their local SNF in Bnei Akiva, and he would give them so much attention. For me personally, as well as for so many Rabbanim and communal leaders, there's such a huge challenge in how to balance our time and our energy and our focus between the community responsibilities seem endless, and to balance that with our family responsibilities. And Rav Aaron really was a model, despite everything he was involved with, of how to prioritize. Another thing I learned from the Hespedim last week, which I did not know, is how generous a Baal Tzedakah he was. In addition to giving so generously, despite not being wealthy at all, he was so patient and kind to all the Aniyim who came to his house. And Yerushalayim, that's a lot. His daughter recalled how one of the more frequent visitors to their home would say, Rav Lichtenstein is always available to me. If anyone knew how busy he was, knew what an amazing statement that was. Another aspect of his integrity was the way he integrated the humanities and especially English literature with his worldview. One of the Maspidim last week relayed that when he was in college, when Lichtenstein was in college, he asked the Rav what he should study. The Rav was already his Rebbe. And the Rav told him to study math. So he took a math course. He didn't like it. So he said to the Rav, well, what should I study? He said, take more math. So he did, and he didn't like it. Switched to English. He believed, as he's written in many occasions, that English literature gave him insight into understanding the human condition. He believed deeply in the Rambam's approach that the truth can be learned from anywhere and anyone. And he would often quote secular sources in his sichot and his shiurim to express what he wanted to say in a more precise way to help him drive home a point. Complete integration. But the Torah and the Emunah were always the priority, the bedrock and the anchor. And learning general knowledge was important only in the service of his Avodas Hashem. In fact, there was one Suda Shlishi towards the end of reading Sefer Shemot that Rav Lichtenstein gave the following sicha. He said, why is it that when it comes to the position and the location of the Kelim in the Mishkan, the Torah tells us clearly that the Shulchan should be placed on the north side of the Mishkan? But when it comes to the menorah, in almost every pasuk that talks about it, it doesn't tell you it should be placed on the south side. It tells us it should be placed opposite the Shulchan in almost every place. Why doesn't it give the location of the menorah by itself on the southern wall? Rav Aaron answered, the menorah being the most complex of all the kelim, kaf tof haferach, seven branches, so intricate and so detailed, this represents philosophy and intellectual pursuits. including Torah and Lamdas. While the shape of the Shulchan is very simple shape, a simple rectangle. The lesson being, the menorah always has to be opposite the Shulchan. All of our intellectual and philosophical pursuits always must be opposite, built on, based on, in relation to our deep, simple emunah and avodas Hashem. And that's really the way he lived his life. For all his sophistication and brilliance, Rav Aaron had a very powerful and deep emunah. He described this emunah in many writings that are highly recommended. One article, famous one, Sources of Faith, easily accessible online. More recently, in the Mevakshei Panecha interview book, and I'm sure there are others. But truthfully, watching him daven, say Kaddish, read the Dirshu Hashem Haftorah on the Tainis, watching him dance, holding the Torah so tightly for hours on end on Simchas Torah, singing over and over, Ma'ahavti Torah Secha Kol Yom Hisichasi, was an amazing experience of total devotion. One of the most emotional parts for me of the Hespedim and the Levaya last week was when his daughter described the experience of accompanying him in the ambulance a few months earlier when he was rushed to the hospital. She described him as saying over and over, and I could hear the accent and the voice and the intonation of how he would say it, B'yadcha afkid ruchi padiso si Hashem elemes. This is what he was thinking about in the ambulance, declaring to Hashem his readiness to give over his soul. His life was one of complete dveikus, and through his teaching and his personal example, he was mekadesh shem shamayim, and literally brought everyone he met a little bit closer to Judaism and to Hashem. It's no doubt that so many politicians from the whole spectrum issued statements last week mourning his loss. He impacted and impressed everyone who he encountered, and with his passing, there's definitely a diminishment of Kiddush Hashem in the world. Beyond the personal loss to his family, his men of Talmidim, who feel bereft of their Rebbe, for the entire Jewish world, and in particular the modern centrist Orthodox Dati Lumi world, this was a cataclysmic loss for us. He was our elder statesman, our leader, our compass, and our conscience. He wrote the defining article about the Hesder movement. He wrote many articles defining, describing, reflecting, and even critiquing centrist Orthodoxy. One of the reasons his impact is so great on the modern Orthodox world is that thousands of his Talmidim who he taught, out of the thousands of Talmidim, hundreds if not thousands of them, went on to become Rabbanim, Rashi Yeshiva, and to occupy positions of communal leadership in their own right, and are trying to continue his derech. He literally taught and empowered the next generation of leaders and served as their guide. While he is no longer in this world physically with us, for those of us who knew him, and who got a chance to meet him personally, we have our memories. And for all of us, he left behind many, many writings, shiurim, sichot, that have been summarized and published. Let us all continue to learn from his Torah, to learn from his example of emunah, hasmada, integrity, openness, humility, how to lead a life of kedusha while integrating and directing all aspects of our lives towards avodas Hashem. Yehi zichro baruch. Thank you.